baseball.
This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, the only podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring interviews with coaches and guests from across the country.
Welcome in Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com, Joe Healy of Baseball America, Chris Burke is with the ESPN SEC Network.
Now from Fayetteville, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Arkansas hasn't been out of the top 10 all season, but up until about mid-April, most weren't sure what to make of this year's Razorbacks. But then Arkansas had that big comeback against Vanderbilt, followed it up with series sweeps of Mississippi State and Tennessee in Fayetteville, and all of a sudden you realize that this team might be as good as last year's team that reached the College World Series championship round. You can draw a lot of comparisons between the 2018 Razorbacks and the ones of 2019. Both were division champions, both were national seeds, both had a lot of great draft prospects. And now this year's team is two wins shy of becoming the first from Arkansas to go to Omaha back-to-back years. The team that stands in the way is Ole Miss, which has had more success against Arkansas the past few years than maybe any other. The Rebels have won 3 of 5 games against Arkansas this year, won 2 of 3 in Fayetteville in March, and the team split 2 games at the SEC tournament a couple of weeks back. It's hard to know what to make of the games that were played in Hoover because of all the differences in the pitching rotations and in the lineups. For instance, when Arkansas beat Ole Miss at the SEC tournament, Ole Miss was starting a non-weekend starter on the mound. And when Ole Miss beat Arkansas 2 days later, Arkansas pulled its starting pitcher after 5 innings and was playing a number of players who were usually backups. They were resting a lot of their starters in that game. What is clear is that Ole Miss, unlike most teams, has found a way to win in Fayetteville. The Rebels have won 4 of their past 6 games at Baum-Walker Stadium, and considered that Arkansas has only lost 14 other times in 106 games over the past 3 seasons at home. Now, Arkansas, you know how they got to this point. A regional win last week that included 2 wins over TCU by scores of 3-1 and 6-0. The Razorbacks pitching was outstanding in the regional. Isaiah Campbell, a great 8-inning performance against TCU in the first meeting, and then Patrick Wicklander, Cody Scroggins, Jacob Kostyshuk in the second game. Most of the games were in doubt until the late innings, but you never felt like Arkansas was in danger of losing any of them. The Razorbacks never trailed in the regional. Now, down in Oxford, Ole Miss was downright dominant in its regional. Had victories over Jacksonville State and Clemson. The Rebels did catch a break when Jacksonville State made it to the regional championship round by eliminating Clemson on Sunday, and then Ole Miss beat Jacksonville State handily 19-4. A lot of people thought that might be a more competitive regional than it ended up being. Clemson and Illinois. We had Joe Healy from Baseball America on our show last week, and he said he thought Illinois might come out of there and win that regional. Well, Illinois didn't even win one game. The Ole Miss regional was wrapping up as Arkansas coach Dave Van Horn was making his postgame comments following the win over TCU. I asked him about playing a team so many times. The Ole Miss games this weekend will be the 6th and 7th and possibly 8th meetings between these teams this year. And here's what he had to say about seeing a team so many times now in the postseason.
I mean, advantages, disadvantages, it's kind of, they wash each other out because we've seen each other. We know our tendencies. We know who's going to pitch. We know how to, we think we know how to get their guys out if our guys can execute pitches or how we can hit their pitchers. But, you know, I think it, you can throw the records out the window. It comes down to one weekend. Who's going to get the big hit? Who's going to make a pitch? Who's going to get a bloop single? Who's going to play defense? So I don't know. I don't think it's that big a deal that, you know, we're playing an SEC school. I don't think anybody in the SEC would prefer it. We would rather be playing somebody out. I can't speak for the other coaches, but I just know how we talk, how we're kind of relieved to get away from the SEC when we get to regionals and super regionals. But, you know, the committee lined everybody up this way, it seemed like, for the most part. And you know, feel fortunate to be here. So, and I'm sure, you know, Ole Miss feels good. Now, what about, how do I feel about them? They're really talented, and they're a very old team. I mean, they have older players. They, you know, they kept some guys from signing last year and got a couple guys back. We got a freshman who's the best, to me, he's the best freshman pitcher in the league this year. And he's really been kind of their go-to guy, and he pitches second. And, you know, they have power. They've got a few guys that can run. They've got a shortstop that can flat-out play. I mean, they got some guys that are going to play in the big leagues. So, just basically I'm just describing two or three or four teams in our league right now that have experience, and they're one of them. And, you know, they were preseason one of the top teams in the country. I know they're top 10 in about every poll, and, you know, they're playing well. They played all the way through the conference tournament championship, and now they're smoked everybody in their regional for the most part, it sounds like to me.
It has been an eventful week for both teams. Not only have they been preparing for this super regional, but they also had to deal with the poorly timed MLB draft. Arkansas had six players taken in the first 2 days of the draft. Dominic Fletcher to the Diamondbacks and Isaiah Campbell to the Mariners in the second round. And then Matt Cronin went to the Nationals in the fourth round. Jacob Kostyshok to the Rockies. Jack Kenley to the Tigers in the eighth round. And Cody Scroggins was a ninth round pick of the Boston Red Sox. Zach Plunkett was also drafted in the 20th round by the Dodgers. It was a good draft year for Arkansas from a signees perspective. The Razorbacks had only three signees or commitments who were taken in this year's draft. Junior college outfielder Chet Allison went to the Dodgers in the 24th round. High school outfielder Jason Hodges went to the Reds in the 34th round. And Dominic Thomas, outfielder catcher from San Antonio, went to the Mariners in the 35th round. It's not clear yet what Hodges or Thomas will do, but it would likely take signing bonuses well over slot to get them away from college. Chet Allison, who batted .446 and slugged over .800 this year at Fresno City College in California, told me he's leaning toward going to school next year. His coach, Ron Scott, had some great things to say about him.
Well, I've been 31 years at City College. He's certainly one of the top five I've ever coached, and I've had seven go to the big leagues, but he's a complete guy. He's 6'2", 6'3", 215, runs, throws. Mm-hmm. He has all those tools that you look for as a professional player.
The deadline for drafted players to sign is in early July. Now the table's set to talk more about the Super Regional, and for that we bring in our friend Kendall Rogers from D1Baseball.com. Kendall, as always, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, you got it.
All right, so Kendall, let's talk about this Arkansas-Ole Miss series. You were here in March when Ole Miss came in and won 2 of 3 in Fayetteville. I think at that time we had you on the podcast that week, and I think you're kind of like me. You're a little surprised maybe by the result of that weekend. What do you remember about that? And as they, you know, get ready to play again this weekend, kind of what are your feelings about the Super Regional?
Well, I think the biggest thing, when you look back at that series earlier this year in Fayetteville, Arkansas was a totally different team. You know, offensively, they were still doing some good things. But, I mean, if you remember back at that series, I think Casey Martin was hitting around, 255, 260, and clearly he's not hitting that anymore. He's been on a tear, and, you know, this lineup has been, you know, I know people kind of were down about him, with the performance at A&M and Hoover, but this is still a very good lineup that is certainly in the zone, and they weren't in the zone that week, and they lost 2 out of 3 to Ole Miss. So, I think the series is totally different because I think the teams are a little different. I think even Ole Miss, if you look back at that series and really kind of the way they pitched all year long, the bullpen was a concern. The bullpen kind of got the job done here in the last couple of weeks. So I feel like both teams are playing better than they were playing at that point. I think if you're Ole Miss, you kind of don't like the fact that you've won 3 out of 4 against Arkansas, because you probably feel like your luck's going to run out at some point against a team that good and on the road.
Another big difference with Arkansas since St. Kendall has been the development of their starting pitchers. Connor Noland has really, really developed into a nice pitcher for Arkansas and pitches real well in Fayetteville. And even Patrick Wicklander's had some outings. I wonder what you've thought about their pitching, because it seemed like early in the season maybe the thought was that the pitching was what was holding them back. I know they had some offensive struggles at some points.
Yeah.
But, man, when they really got it going there during the middle of the season, it was the offense that was carrying them. And now they've gotten to a point where their pitching is, last week held TCU to one run and shut TCU out. And they've been pitching pretty well lately.
No, you're right. And, especially Connor Nolan, kind of starting with him, he was a guy that I kind of felt like, down the stretch really turned things on, and he's got some velo there. He's at 89, 91, he'll get up to 92, and secondary stuff has been coming along pretty well. And so, a lot like Doug Nikhazy for Ole Miss, really impressed just Connor Nolan's approach on the mound. He's got a very mature approach. He doesn't go out there and pitch like a freshman. You kind of wonder if maybe his football background kind of factors in a little bit there with kind of just his toughness and approach. And even Patrick Wicklander, he's a lefty that can, get up to 92 and 93 if it's warm outside. And so he's a guy that's certainly capable of going out there and putting up some zeros. So, both of these teams, really, it's kind of interesting, Matt. You look at both of these teams, they both have you know, solid aces. Obviously, Arkansas has the big advantage with Isaiah over Will Etheridge. But these, both of these teams rely on true freshmen on the back end of their rotation, which is pretty unique for two teams out of the SEC going at it in the Super Regional.
What have you thought of Isaiah Campbell the past few weeks, and in particular how he was able to pitch last week against TCU and Nicola Dolo?
Yeah, I love what he's done this year. You know, he's a guy that, you know, if you remember back at last year, for most of the season really, he was just kind of back and forth, a little up and down. And, you know, when you're dealing with that and when you're dealing with, you know, people talking about how you're inconsistent and things like that, it, you know, sometimes it's not easy for guys to handle. And, you know, I think Isaiah went in the offseason wanting to fix that. And he's kind of been like a man possessed this year with just the way he's pitched every single weekend. And so I'm impressed with his consistency. I think he's a guy that once his college career is over is going to move pretty fast through the system because you're talking about a guy with, you know, he's got a pro body now. He's got a big league body already. He can throw four pitches for strikes, and he's ultra consistent. So I'm really excited to not only see him this weekend and potentially in Omaha, but also just to see what he does at the next level. I think he's going to move pretty quick.
What have you thought of this wild swing that Ole Miss has had over the last 15, 16 games or so from, you know, not being able to win a game to now I think they're 8-2 over their last 10?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that going into Hoover, I mean, they're fans, and it even seems like a couple of their administrators were talking about potentially parting ways with Mike Bianco. And, you know, I don't know if that was kind of the thing that got them going or what, but boy, you're right. They've been a totally different club. And, you know, I think it all started, if you remember back at that, I think it was the second game in Hoover against A&M. Their bullpen had really been struggling. And, you know, they go in there against A&M. And Dunn Casey plays really well against the Aggies. And then they, you know, turn the game over to Parker Crazy. And he gives up, I think it was like a double or something, one out. And Crazy finds a way to get out of that jam. And really, they've been a totally different team since that point. They believe in their bullpen. The starting pitching's been solid. Even Gunnar Hoagland in the number three spot has thrown really well for them. And so I don't know if it's just the Mike Bianco rumors kind of got them rolling or if that game against A&M is kind of what got them going. But, boy, you're right. They are a different team. You know, they not only did they win their regional, but they just, you know, dominated teams. And granted, they played Jacksonville State in the final. But, I mean, let's not forget they lost two games to Tennessee Tech a year ago. So really impressed with the turnaround they've had because this is a team that, you know, coming into the year, like Arkansas, we had as a top 15 team, a team that we thought would not only compete to get to Omaha, but potentially for a national championship. And so it's kind of cool to see both of these teams playing at such a high level.
You've mentioned Doug Nikhazy a couple of times. Dave Van Horn said this week that Doug Nikhazy actually got his vote for Freshman of the Year. They didn't win the award, but what have you seen from him that's made him so good this season?
Well, I think the biggest thing for him is just his maturity, and we kind of talked about that with Connor Nolan. But, you know, you look at Nikhazy, and I kind of think back to that A&M game in Hoover. I mean, he had to be perfect in that game because, you know, A&M threw, what, a no-hitter through eight innings. And he matched, you know, Asa Lacy pitch for pitch. So that wasn't easy. And, you know, the thing I look at with him is he can locate his breaking ball up in the zone. He can throw 89, 91 all over the plate. And just his demeanor, going in a place like Fayetteville, he's the perfect guy to have for Ole Miss because, he's one of those guys that motivates him. That's not one of those things that intimidates him, it motivates him. So that's not to say he's going to go out there and shut down a lineup like Arkansas that's as potent as they are. But he's not a guy that's just going to totally unravel. So I'm just impressed with not only his stuff, but just his approach and his makeup. He certainly is a guy that, as one coach said in our preview for this regional, he's going to be a guy that's going to be held to deal with the next couple of years.
Is there a better super regional matchup of closers than this one, Matt Cronin and Parker Crazy?
This is pretty good. There's some good ones out there. You know, you look at, you know, Mississippi State with Jack Little for Stanford against those guys. But you're right. I mean, Matt Cronin and Parker Crazy, you know, not only great closers, but, you know, totally different guys. I mean, you're looking at Cronin being a lefty who's just going to go to the old school approach of trying to blow you away. And he'll mix in a breaking ball. I mean, you know, Crazy's more of a, you know, he'll throw Joe Velo, but he's more of a, hey, I'm going to try to get you out with my breaking ball type of guy. So totally different pitchers. But, you know, Crazy this weekend, it's kind of the X factor, I feel like. You know, he's one of those guys that even though he has pitched well lately, he's going back on the road to an SEC venue. And, you know, he has struggled at times closing out games on the road this year. So really interested to see how he pitches in that environment.
Kendall, this weekend will be the 62nd and 63rd and maybe 64th games that Dave Van Horn and Mike Bianco have coached against each other. That's the most in the SEC since Ron Polk and Skip Bertman. I just wonder what you think about those two and the influence that they've had on the conference.
Yeah, I mean, those two guys have been awesome. And, you know, and I think I've said this before, but, you know, Dave Van Horn's whole, what he means to the sport as a whole. You know, you think back at, you know, when he was at Northwestern State, you think back at what he did against Nebraska. I mean, what he did at Nebraska, honestly, is borderline remarkable when you look at how bad their history was, how bad their ballpark was before they built Hawks Field. And so, you know, his contributions are well noted, and certainly he's done a great job at Arkansas, and he's a guy that certainly will get a national championship at some point. It might just be this year. And to Mike Bianco, you know, he's going to pass Skip Bertman's wins total in the SEC at some point. That's not easy to do. So, though I totally get it, Ole Miss fans wanting a national championship and wanting to get to Omaha more often, it's one of those things like, hey, be careful what you wish for, because this guy's a consistent winner. And, you know, it could be one of those situations like you see in other programs in baseball. You know, you think about Texas, when they parted ways with Augie Garrido, it took them a little bit to kind of get rolling again. And it's happened in some other programs. So I think both of these programs are in great spots. And certainly those two coaches mean a lot to the game.
You know, they both came out of the Southland. Dave Van Horn was a head, or he was an assistant under Norm DeBrine at Arkansas for a few years, and Bianco was under Bertman. But there have been a lot of really good SEC coaches that have come from the Southland. There's Van Horn, Bianco, John Cohen came out of there, Jim Wells, and you can go on and on. It's kind of remarkable, I think, what that conference has been able to contribute to the SEC.
No, yeah, it really is. I mean, Rob Childers has ties to Northwestern State, mm-hmm. and so, you know, Mitch Gaspard was a Northwestern State guy. You know, he's the former Alabama coach, now the volunteer at Georgia. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, there is a lot of guys out of that Southland Conference, and particularly Northwestern State. So the Southland has been a great asset to college baseball. You look at the same Houston State now kind of becoming the segue to a bigger job, but, you know, with David Pierce going to Tulane and then off to Texas. You know, they got Mark Johnson when he left A&M to go to Sam Houston, and now they got Matt Degg, the guy that I think will be a Power 5 coach here probably sooner rather than later. So it's been kind of cool to, especially where I live, kind of see the Southland do what it's done in baseball.
Yeah, Degg is, of course, an old Van Horn assistant. Kendall, when you get to this point in the season, we know Arkansas is really good at home, but they've struggled against Ole Miss at Baum. In fact, Arkansas has lost three series at Baum-Walker Stadium in the last 3 years, and two of them have been to Ole Miss. What are the advantages of playing at home this season? I mean, because we seem to see more often than not, the home team is able to, you know, advance past these home super regionals.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is it's totally different. I mean, if you think back and I think I was even there the last time they played Ole Miss at home in conference before this year. Mm-hmm. And if I remember right, both of those series are pretty cold. And it's just a different atmosphere. I mean, even the one earlier this year, I remember Sunday, everybody's like bundled up. Like, it's just not the same. And so I think, if you're an Arkansas fan, you go, okay, they kind of had our number. But you also look at it and go, man, this is totally different. It's not 52 degrees and windy. It's going to be warm. It's going to be crazy. And, you know, your season's on the line. You know, if you win two, you're in Omaha. If you lose two, you're going home. And so I just think the stakes are a little different. I don't think you can really compare them because it's just totally different environments.
There were some people who, going into the Fayetteville Regional last week, said it was the easiest regional for the host team. But then you get into it, and TCU becomes the second-best team in the regional, and Central Connecticut State, I thought, played well over its head and was really competitive in all the games that it played. I mean, was it more competitive maybe than you expected?
Yeah, I think it was more competitive, but I'll say this. I think it probably just looked like it was easy because Arkansas made it look easy. I thought Arkansas played really, really well over the weekend. TCU, if you remember, had been pretty red hot offensively. You know, they hit well in the Big 12 tournament. So for Arkansas to kind of shut them down offensively was pretty impressive. And so I think it more had to do more with Arkansas playing well than, you know, Cal not playing well. I thought Cal was a surprise to me. I thought that not only would they beat TCU, I thought they might make things pretty interesting there, and they kind of went out with a whimper. So, pretty much what happened, at least at the top of that regional, is what happened.
there are five SEC West teams who are in the Super Regional, and at least four of them could potentially advance to Omaha next week. Of course, Arkansas and Ole Miss cancel each other out. What have you thought about this division, and what are the prospects for the division having multiple teams in Omaha?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the chances are pretty good, and what a job this division has done. I mean, look back at the SEC West. I think they went 17-2 last week with A&M being the only two losses, and they won one of those games. So, you know, the West is kind of what we thought it would be. I mean, it's been the best division in baseball for years, and it's been by far the best division in baseball this year. So I'm really intrigued to see these matchups. I think some of these teams are vulnerable. I think you look at LSU and Florida State. Florida State is really scary right now. I think they're playing with house money. They're also playing for Mike Martin in his final season. Mm-hmm. I think Stanford is a scary team because they get away from the Bay Area. They get away from the Marine layer at night, and they're going to places where their ball typically flies out of there. And they've got some big boppers in the middle of that lineup. So that's going to be scary. Then, of course, you have Ole Miss and Arkansas, and you have no idea what to expect now with the way those two teams are playing right now. So it should be a lot of fun. I'm really interested to see just how many SEC teams do get to Omaha. I think you could definitely throw Vandy in that mix. I don't see them losing to Duke at home.
Final question, Kendall. This Super Regional, Arkansas, Ole Miss. Ole Miss has won 10-14, but Arkansas has been so good at home. What do you have a prediction, or do you have something that you're watching for that maybe you think will happen?
Yeah, I think Arkansas wins it in three, and I think Arkansas wins the opener, loses game two, and comes back and wins game three. I think the big key for Arkansas is they do need to win the opener. I mean, that goes without saying, but mm-hmm. when you look at the job that Isaiah Campbell has done this year, I just don't think you can lose with him and then throw the whole season on two freshmen. And the same goes for Ole Miss with those two freshmen. I feel pretty good about Nikhazy, but Gunnar Hoagland's a guy that's going to try to get a lot of outs with his fastball. And I just don't feel near as good about his chances of trying to shut down Arkansas's lineup as I do, Nikhazy. I think the other thing for me, too, that's going to be a key for this weekend are the two bullpens. Although, Ole Miss has Austin Miller and Parker Gracie, I feel like Arkansas can kind of piece things together a little bit better. I think you look at Cole Ramage, for instance. I know his ERA is not great, but, he's a guy that, let's say, one of those freshmen get in a little trouble. He's more than capable of going out there and giving Van Horn four or five innings out of the pen of pretty good baseball. So, I just think Arkansas has an advantage in the bullpen. I think they have an advantage offensively, and ultimately I think they win the series. I think it's going to be a really good one. I think Ole Miss knows it can go in there and win, and I think it's going to be a fun one.
All right. Well, Kendall, we appreciate your time. Hopefully we see you next week in Omaha.
Yeah, you got it, Matt. See you
all right.
soon.
Thank you. Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com. When we come back, fair or foul with Dudley Dawson of Hogs Illustrated on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now it's time for Fair or Foul.
Dudley Dawson of Hogs Illustrated with me now. We'll play a game of Fair or Foul. Scotty Bordelon, what's our first question?
Fair or Foul, a Super Regional with only day games?
I'm going to say foul. I think with all these games, you should be able to switch it around to where, you have night games for some teams. I guess it's okay because it's Saturday and Sunday, the first two games, 11 a.m. on Saturday. But that's still going to keep some people from maybe coming up that would. But I just think you should spread it around a little bit and give them an opportunity to, have night games as well.
I think it's fair, and I'll tell you why in just a second. But remember first that the second or the third game, if they go to game three on Monday, it can be pushed back, assuming that there's another series or two series or something that start on Saturday that don't go three games. Then there's a very good chance that Arkansas and Ole Miss would get pushed back on that day. But I think it's fair because you have to understand how these games are determined, and it's all about eyeballs and television sets. And let's face it, in Arkansas and Mississippi, there's 6 million people, and half of Mississippi is divided between a couple of schools. And so it's a big deal in those states, maybe in some surrounding states, people who are big SEC fans and they want to see this matchup. But it's not Florida State LSU, which is going to get the night games and gets the A-list announcers. You know, and it's not some of these others like Vanderbilt, who's got the number four overall draft pick playing in the games. And so I understand why they put the games where they did. And, hey, I'm okay with it. I think, like Jack Kinley said the other day, they asked him if they were okay with playing or not playing night games. He said, hey, look, prime time's whenever we play. And it actually worked out well with Arkansas' schedule this week. Dave Van Horn said on Friday before the Super Regional began that they've been having 11 a.m. practices all week, and that was in place even before the 11 a.m. schedule. So it helps the team stay in a little bit of a rhythm and a little bit of a schedule from what they've been doing. So I don't see anything wrong with it.
Young Mr. Kinley has become a better player. And a better
He sure has. All right, Scotty, what's next?
Fair or foul, the number of commitments drafted is a good indication of the strength of a signing class.
I think that's foul, and I think that's way foul. I don't think there's – if you are trying to rank a recruiting class based on the numbers of players who were drafted, you misunderstand the MLB draft completely. It's not like football. It's not like basketball, where you just take the next best player and, you know, maybe the next best guy at a need position that you have. It's about signability in baseball, and there are some other things that factor into this as well. But if a player can't get his number right with a franchise, you know, for his signing bonus, then he's not going to get drafted. And that's why you've seen Zach Cox fall to the 20th round or Andrew Benintendi fell to the 31st round out of high school. It's not like Andrew Benintendi went from a 31st rounder to the 7th overall pick. The scouts knew about Andrew Benintendi. It's just that he said, hey, I want to go to college for 2 years, and if you want me not to go to college, you're going to have to buy me out. And it didn't happen for him. And so I think that was kind of a similar thing with some of these players that are in Arkansas signing class. I've heard this criticism over the past few days that Arkansas signing class must be a little overrated because they only had three players drafted and none before the 24th round. And I don't think that's fair. I think there's a number of players that are in this signing class who could have been drafted high. It's just that their number wasn't right. And, you know, they told the scouts up front, I want to go play college baseball. And, you know, if you want me to keep from playing college baseball, you got to give me the right figure. And I think that, you know, the same goes for some of the Arkansas players who were drafted, like Isaiah Campbell. I have no doubt in my mind Isaiah Campbell could have been drafted before the 76th pick or whatever it was that he was taken. He could have been a first rounder if he would have settled for the right amount of money. And the same goes for Blaine Knight last year and Trevor Stephan the year before that and on throughout, you know, the however long we've been having the MLB draft. But no, I don't think that's fair to characterize a signing class based on how many players they had drafted or where they were drafted.
I think foul as well, and I've talked to a lot of these kids here over the last few weeks, doing some stories on them, and what I'm surprised and sometimes amazed about is how much these kids really want to come and play for Arkansas. But then you think about it, and right now playing at Arkansas is much better situation than playing in the minor leagues. Now, if you get a lot of money, then it's a different story. You're set up for life. But if it's not the very big money, then you're better off coming to college. And I would say if you want excitement in the June draft for Arkansas's recruiting class, you shouldn't. But if you do, just wait till 2020 when Arkansas has a class. It's ranked number two right now by Perfect Game, only ranked number two because Miami has two more commitments than Arkansas at this point. Each of those have seven top 100 players. So, you know, be ready for some excitement next June.
Yeah, it definitely can be. And Tony Vitello told me a couple of years ago, Dudley, and I think of this because this 2019 class, because they commit baseball players so young when they're 14, 15 years old. He had a big hand in this signing class. He told me that they've done a really good job of evaluating players who aren't going to be hitting their ceiling out of high school and who are going to be a lot better player than, you know, they're going to be a lot more draft ready, if you will, when they're 19, 20 years old than maybe they are when they're 18 years old, like, say, you know, the shortstop Bobby Witt, who was drafted second overall this year. Arkansas is not committing a lot of those types of players. They're really being selective with how many high draft risks that they take commitments from. And so I think that's something to remember, too, with this class, players like Kasem Tolette, Jesse Pierce, who's an infielder from Las Vegas, Zach Morris, a left-handed pitcher from Cabot. I think they've got a lot of players who are going to come in, and they're going to be really good college baseball players who are going to be a lot more ready for the draft in a few years than, you know, and I think it's got a chance to be a class maybe similar to like the 2015 class with Isaiah Campbell and Blaine Knight and Barrett Loeschke and Jake Rindle and Eric Cole and Grant Cook, and you go on and on. That was a class that had a lot of studs in it, but it was only ranked 43rd, you know, out of high school.
Yeah, and I would tell you that Coach Dave Van Horn knows exactly what he's got, and he's smiling at the end of this. and if it wasn't a great class, he wouldn't be. He'd be frowning.
All right, Scotty, what's last?
Fair or foul, an Ole Miss fan podcast this week said Baum Walker Stadium was not intimidating for visiting teams.
I think that's foul. I mean, you know, I'm sure that he says that. Whoever said it about Mississippi State and all these other places as well. But I know from talking to players after ball game, from talking to head coaches, that Baum Walker Stadium is an advantage. And if it was an advantage, people would, you know, wouldn't mind playing on the road all the time. And I have to give Ole Miss credit. They've had Arkansas's number at times, came in here and won 2 out of 3, obviously, this year, and have won 3 out of 5 overall against them. But, again, I have been there, been around enough to know what an intimidating presence is, and that is what they have at Arkansas now.
You got to remember when Ole Miss has played games here, too. It's been in March. It's been when it's cold. Maybe the people are still interested in basketball or spring football or something else. It becomes a different place to play in late April, early May, and once you get into the postseason. And it was an incredible atmosphere, I thought, last week for those two games against TCU. I actually sat downstairs at the media auxiliary table out in the crowd just because I wanted to be out there in the middle of the crowd and kind of experience, you know, what that was like. And it's an unbelievable atmosphere. And I think a few years ago – this is foul, by the way. I think a few years ago I might have said that was a fair assessment because, you know, there was that thought process for a number of years that the baseball stadium might have been a lot like Razorback Stadium in football, where people wait for the plays to develop, as opposed to maybe a Bud Walton Arena or a War Memorial Stadium that have had, you know, more raucous crowds, you know, that seem to influence the games more. But I think you look at Arkansas's record over the last 3 years at Baum, 94-18 is the record in the last 3 years. It's an incredible place to play, and I think it's an incredibly difficult place to play. And I think once you get to the postseason, it becomes even more so because teams do a lot better at home in the postseason. That's just how it is. They're a lot more comfortable playing at home, and I think it'll be a great atmosphere this weekend.
And I would tell you that Arkansas fans, I think, were very gracious to the teams here last week because they didn't really have anything against them. But they do have a lot of acrimony and animosity against the Rebels.
Not a lot of love
in lost. Large part because of the way Ole Miss carries themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think there'll be plenty of that in the ballpark this weekend. I also think that as we go along, now that the SEC has approved the alcohol rule, that the crowds at Baum Walker Stadium and many other places are going to become more spirited. Maybe not at 11 a.m., but at night.
Dudley, we appreciate your time.
You bet.
When we come back, Mike Rooney from Perfect Game and ESPN talk about this weekend's super regional matchups. That and more on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app, presented by Absolute Heat and Air. Check out the all-new Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app is presented by Absolute Heat and Air. For the absolute best service, trust Absolute Heat and Air.
Mike Rooney is with ESPN and Perfect Game. Mike, we appreciate you taking some time for us.
You got it, absolutely.
So, Mike, I want to ask you about the regionals first. You had a great seat last week with ESPN Bases Loaded, and that was probably about as entertaining a first weekend of regionals as I can remember. The A&M walk-off home run, Auburn had a walk-off home run, Oklahoma State may as well have had a walk-off home run in the top of the ninth inning. I mean, just how much fun was that to sit there and watch that last week?
Yeah, it was super awesome. I mean, it's hard to even describe the bases loaded thing, but you have all those screens in front of you, and you know, you're right. It was, you know, one thing that really struck me was the atmospheres we had were incredible. You know, like the Morgantown thing, you could feel the electricity through the television screen, and you know, Bryce Blom's home run, which you referenced, was crazy. And you know, we spent a lot of time watching the Greenville Regional with Quinnipiac doing damage there, and Campbell almost winning that thing, and you know, it was really interesting. We did have a lot of chalk emerge from the regionals, but we had very little chalk that emerged easily. It was amazing how many one seeds had to come back through the loser's bracket. So it was, you know, you referenced Trevor Boone's home run for Oklahoma State. I mean, that one, I mean, even one that slipped under the radar, Aaron Sabato, the freshman for North Carolina, I mean, they're fixing to get to lose to UNCW in that first game. And, you know, true freshman, first pitch of the ninth inning, and he just hits a monster home run to tie the game. So it was awesome. It was really some incredible moments for the regional weekend.
Isn't it amazing how much technology has changed this time of year? I mean, I remember it wasn't 9 or 10 years ago you were having to watch these games on an internet screen with only two cameras, and there may or may not be an announcer. It's really incredible, I think, what ESPN's been able to do to not only grow the sport, but especially grow the sport this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And of course, you know, self-serving and biased there, but the Bases Loaded thing has been super fun to do and, you know, and a great way for, I think, people to consume a 64-team tournament. And, you know, and I would say also, like, the combination of social media and Bases Loaded, where, you know, social media is a very good place to stay up with college baseball. And then you can get to the ESPN app and find the game that's coming down to the wire, those types of things. So, yeah, it was cool. It's one of my favorite weekends of the year.
What did you think of the Arkansas Regional last week with Arkansas beating TCU twice to advance?
Yeah, I that was a very interesting regional to me on the front end, because I thought very highly of Cal, and I thought, you know, and as it turns out, we were part right and part wrong, right? Like, I think their coach, Mike New, is a rising star in our business, and so I think Cal's not going anywhere. And, you know, as it turns out, they had two first-round picks, which was, you know, fairly amazing. And then TCU was interesting, because I really believe TCU got into the regionals because the committee saw Jared Janczak have that incredible 12-strikeout performance in the Big 12 tournament. And, you know, and it is true. If you look at TCU and say, okay, Jared Janczak's back, that's a very different team. But I was very impressed that Arkansas kind of dominated that regional, considering that I thought TCU and Cal were very viable. You know, that wasn't a layup. Arkansas was not given a layup, but they almost kind of turned it into a layup.
I was really impressed with the way Central Connecticut played. I mean, this is a team that had never won an NCAA tournament game, and they were really competitive in all their games. Even the one against Arkansas was 11-5, and, you know, really came down to the late innings.
And I thought it was really cool what I saw on social media, that the way the Arkansas fan base and the Central Connecticut State kids kind of embraced. And, you know, I thought that you're right. Like, that was, you know, Central Connecticut State almost had no business even being in the tournament, because we felt that Bryant was such a heavy favorite from their conference. And that was really, you know, for them to go in and compete like they did. And then, you know, again, seeing the pictures of them in the hog pen and the whole deal, like, that is really what it's supposed to be about.
Have you been to a game in Fayetteville during the postseason, Mike?
I have never been there for postseason, but I've been there. You know, it's funny. In 2009, I was doing radio for Arizona State. I had just finished coaching, and it was a Wednesday night game. It was a Tuesday, Wednesday midweek series. And, you know, Arizona State's team was loaded. You know, Mike Lee, Cole Calhoun, Jason Kipnis. And so both teams were number one in the country. And it's a midweek game, and I tell this story all the time when I'm trying to explain the Arkansas baseball fan base to people. You know, it's Wednesday night in April, and it was a 6-5 game. It came down to the final pitch, and I looked down from the radio booth, and there, like, every seat is taken, and there was complete gridlock trying to leave the stadium. And, you know, 11,000 people, and maybe it was more. 11,000 is the number in my mind. But when I describe your all's fan base to people, I'm like, that was a Wednesday night in April. That's how much these people care about college baseball.
Yeah, I think that was a record attendance at the time. Still a
been,
top 10
it
attendance.
Was awesome.
Yeah. Well, let's talk some about this super regional between Arkansas and Ole Miss, Mike. I mean, what do you expect? And can you take a whole lot from when these teams have played earlier in the year, or are they so much different now, 2.5 months later, that's really kind of out the window?
Well, I think the answer is both. You know, like, I think it's a really interesting super regional for a lot of reasons. You know, when I think about Arkansas, I think about, you know, the two storylines coming into the season were, okay, will there be a hangover because, you know, that you were one fly out, one foul ball away from being national champs? Like, will that affect the 2019 season? The other thing was, but there is top of the league star power. And can those four kids, you know, Cronin, Martin, Kerstad, and Fletcher, can those, how far can those four kids carry a team? And to me, it's like those stories didn't impact the season at all, really. It was, when I look at Arkansas's season now, I look at, you know what we didn't know? We didn't know how good some of these role players were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Opitz and Kenley and Goodhart and Ezell, and, you know, the bullpen's got more depth than last year's bullpen. So, and the stars didn't play great early and then kind of found their sea legs later. So, you know, and, you know, for Ole Miss, the one thing I'll say about Ole Miss is I really believe that sometimes Omaha happens when you least expect it. And Ole Miss expected to go to Omaha last year. And to your point, I do feel like the fact that they've won games at BOM gives those kids and those coaches maybe a little extra boost of confidence. And here's the other real wild card in this thing. If you play three games, we might have four true freshmen make starts mm-hmm. on the mound. I mean, there's no other super regional that's going to have that. So that's another really interesting aspect of this thing.
You mentioned the role players, and you've been a coach before, so you've been in clubhouses where you've seen this. It seems to me like that's been the big difference in Arkansas, is that, or maybe what was undervalued before the season was the play of or maybe the experience that they had gained just kind of sitting back and watching the older players like Jack Kenley, Jacob Kostyshyk, Cody Scroggins, even in Isaiah Campbell not being asked to be in the role that he was in. They've got 10 players on this roster, Mike, who have been in the program for 3 years or more. That's a big difference when you're talking about a college baseball team, I feel like, and maybe that was undervalued about this team.
Yeah, I agree. Totally undervalued. Like, I just think that we didn't know how good some of the less famous players were. Mm-hmm. You know, even like Christian Franklin, what a year he's had. And yeah, we didn't know, you know, it's like, I think it was both things, right? Like, we felt like maybe Martin, Kerstad, Fletcher, and Cronin, we had built them up. And when I say we, I'm probably saying me. We had kind of turned them into superheroes. And then this year we found out that they're not superheroes. They're just really, really good players. And, you know, good players have streaks of good and bad. And then we just, I guess what I'm most impressed with Arkansas is I think this is a really deep roster full of very skilled baseball players. And I think that's what makes them, as much as I'm intrigued by Ole Miss, and I do think they've got a little special mojo going on right now. As much as that influences my thoughts on the series, I look at Arkansas and I just see a very good baseball team.
I was talking to Kyle Peterson about this a couple of weeks ago, and the question was, did you ever have a team that you just couldn't seem to get over that hurdle against? And he said, believe it or not, for Stanford, it was Sacramento State. But, you know, for Arkansas, it seems like it's been Ole Miss these last few years. Ole Miss has won 10 of 14 in this series, and like you know, like we said, they've come in and they've won two straight in Fayetteville. Is there something to that, to there maybe being a little bit of a mental block or a team just having another team's number?
I think there is. And, you know, and there's kind of two parts to the answer. Like, there definitely is, because you see it. You know, again, we forget these are 18 to 21-year-old kids, and you know, the they don't have the full confidence of a 28-year-old yet, but you know, but also those streaks end too, you know. But I think, you know, for Ole Miss, it doesn't make any sense that they have great success against Arkansas at Arkansas, but yet it doesn't matter where they play Mississippi State right now. They can't beat Mississippi State. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. But it sometimes it happens. But, you know, I also think, you know, it's funny. I'm at the Nashville Super Regional, and, you know, as impressed as everyone is with Vanderbilt, even speaking to their kids, they talked about how, hey, we've been to two super regionals, but we haven't won it. We haven't won one, and we haven't won the SEC tournament in our, you know, kind of career here. And so they talked about, the Vandy kids talked about how winning the SEC tournament was kind of a, hey, okay, we can do that. So we can win a super regional. So I think that's a big part of it. But it's interesting how sometimes you just have success against certain teams, the way hitters and pitchers have success against certain individuals.
Mike, you do some scouting for Perfect Game, I think, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
What do you think of Casey Martin and his prospects for next year? That's what a lot of people have turned their attention to now that this year's draft is over, is who are going to be the prospects next year. How high up on the board could he be?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a first-round prospect for sure. It's going to be very interesting in the league next year because Casey Martin and Austin Martin are very similar players in some regards, really from an athletic and offensive standpoint, mm-hmm. but they've got fairly unique differences as well. And the comp that I've heard, and, you know, Chris, I've stole this from Chris Burke and even others, is both of them are compared to Mookie Betts for parts of their game. And, you know, Mookie Betts, I think, was a fifth-round pick out of high school. I think Austin Martin and Casey Martin are both first-round picks. But, you know, for Casey, he's not a super polished shortstop yet, but he does, there's nothing at shortstop that you've seen him where you'd say, okay, he can't do that. It's just the routine part of it, the consistent part of it. And, you know, again, he's getting his first crack at it in college. So, you know, it's elite speed. It's incredible power for a kid his size. He's so quick twitch. I mean, we don't see quick twitch athletes like Casey Martin in college baseball very often. And, you know, and I mentioned that he's a great runner, but I mean, it's striking when you see Casey Martin. What we do for a lot of people is when we're introducing them to Casey Martin, we show them clips of that inside the park home run. And it's just, I mean, it looks like a video game how fast he's running. So, you know, of course, he's made a lot of errors at shortstop. And that's something that I think scouts will want to see him improve upon next year. But I haven't seen anything in those errors where a scout would walk away and say, hey, I just don't think he can do it. It's more like, hey, he just needs more repetition.
Bubba Carpenter, the radio man for the Razorbacks, has talked a lot about that, yeah, he may have 20 errors, but he may have also made 20 plays in the hole that other shortstops might not be able to make. I wonder how much of that is considered when scouts are talking about his future.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely that, because that's a time-honored, you know, I think, scouting principle that the kids with the most range make the most errors because they get the more, not only do they get the more baseballs, but they get the more difficult baseballs. And, you know, and then an error becomes a matter of, you know, what the scorekeeper thinks. So I think what the scouts will look like at is, you know, just the individual skills. Like, hey, are his hands soft enough? Does he secure the baseball when it's hit to him? Is he an accurate thrower, or does his throwing stroke lend itself to a ball sailing? Or does he, you know, what do the misses look like? Does he spray the ball all over the place? Or does he miss high? Does he miss low? So I think they'll really analyze that. Is it something where, you know, as he naturally slows down, as he matures as an athlete and a person, will that lend itself to more accuracy? So, but again, for me, I haven't seen anything that's a pattern that you'd say, gosh, you know, he really clanks a lot of balls hit right at him, or, you know, boy, he's like, his ball really runs up the first baseline. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything like that. I've seen it more. He's so quick that sometimes that works against him.
I wanted to ask you, too, about Heston Kerstad. Is he a first-round potential?
I think he's a for sure first-round pick. You know, if I was breaking down Heston, the biggest thing, I don't think people get him out. I think he gets himself out at times. He's so aggressive. And, you know, the scouting report on him right now is, don't throw it over the white part and see if he'll swing. I think, you know, it reminds me of J.J. Bleday a little bit, where, you know, just the natural maturation of a hitter. But he's so aggressive that I think he gets himself into some out sometimes. But that's something that you can coach to. That's something that naturally police itself. But, you know, the hand-eye coordinate, I think for Kerstad, the combination of the size and the strength and the athleticism – and the obvious hand-eye coordination, I don't think that's something that teams could walk away from in the first round.
I'm glad you said J.J. Bleday, because that was a comparison that I had in my mind, but I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to sound, you know, like I was comparing him to someone a whole lot better. But it does seem like there are a lot of, you know, comparisons between those two, both in body type and swing and power. And you know, Bleday obviously, you know, burst out this season. It seems like Kerstad might have a chance to do that next year and have that type of season.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, like, so Bleday, I think, is a little cleaner defender than Heston is right now, and probably shows more arm strength. But for both of them, you're drafting the bat more than you're drafting the you know, then you're drafting the defense. And but now I would say, in fairness to, you know, I would say JJ Bleday, maybe you'd think, okay, it's maybe more of a pure hit tool. But if you look at the production, I mean, Heston has been significantly more productive in his first two seasons than JJ Bleday. So that's really exciting. Now, he also has struck out more too. So, you know, there's that. But I mean, JJ Bleday never sniffed double digit home runs coming into this year, and Heston has been comfortably into double digit home runs both years.
One more in the super regionals, Mike. How many SEC teams do you think could get to Omaha?
Boy, that's a great question. I would say I'm very confident in Vandy. I actually think Auburn's going to win the North Carolina Super Regional. I'm concerned about Mississippi State. I think Stanford is a very tricky team for them, and we don't know about, you know, JT Ginn. I think his, you know, whether he pitches in that or doesn't pitch in that is a big factor in that Super Regional. You know, obviously in Fayetteville, we're going to get an SEC team. Mm-hmm. I honestly, for me, if someone asked me to pick LSU, Florida State, I'd be throwing a dart. I said this to somebody yesterday. I don't even know what that Florida State team that showed up in Athens is. Like, we haven't seen that team all year. You know, of course, you know, they've got the all-time wins leader in their dugout in 11. So you got to factor that in. But, you know, I think it's also LSU is an unknown. Like, who is LSU? Are they the team that, you know, lost the series to Missouri, or are they the team that was the preseason number one, or are they the team that kind of rolled through that regional? I don't, you know, they're kind of getting healthy at the right time, but that one's really hard to pick.
If you ask me, it would have been hard to pick before this regional that either Florida State or LSU would be going to the World Series. You always get a surprise team there or two, and I think that's going to be one of the surprises.
And yeah, I'm with you. That one is really interesting and not what I forecasted.
Well, Mike, we appreciate your time and hope you have a great weekend this week in Nashville.
Yeah, you too. Have fun with that super. That'll be a blast.
All right. Appreciate it, Mike. All right. Thanks again to Mike Rooney, Kendall Rogers, Dudley Dawson, all coming on this week's podcast. We will have another podcast next week, and we don't know what we'll be talking about. We might be in Omaha. We might be recapping the season. Until then, hope you'll visit wholehogsports.com. We've got a lot of great content planned for you during the Super Regional against Ole Miss. Game time's 11 a.m. Saturday on ESPN, 2 p.m. on Sunday on ESPNU, and Monday's game is tentatively scheduled for 3 p.m. on ESPN2, although that game time could change. Until next week, I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of wholehogsports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.